Welcome back to The Takeaway. Todd Zwillick with you today. Hillary Clinton is facing a bunch of problems at this early stage in the presidential campaign. The FBI is scouring her private email server to see if and how classified information was mishandled. A federal judge appears poised to order a search of her backup emails. And just yesterday, the State Department tech worker who helped set up that private email server in the first place invoked the Fifth Amendment in the face of questions from Congress and investigators. Now, the Clinton campaign has done its best to move on from the email controversy, but it's clouding an anniversary that Hillary Clinton wants to make an integral theme for the rest of her campaign, and it started 20 years ago, when then-First Lady Hillary Rodham Clinton stood before an audience of Chinese dignitaries in Beijing and defended women's rights.
I believe that now, on the eve of a new millennium, it is time to break the silence. It is time for us to say here in Beijing and for the world to hear that it is no longer acceptable to discuss women's rights as separate from human rights.
That was the United Nations World Conference on Women in Beijing, and the location itself was controversial, as China was then well known for its one-child policy, a law that led many Chinese families to abandon or murder baby girls. If they could have only one child, they wanted that child to be a boy. Now, out of that conference came the Beijing Platform for Action. That was a UN declaration to increase the number and power of women in politics across the world. This weekend, Hillary Clinton's campaign is using that anniversary here in the United States to launch a new initiative that it says will weave Women for Hillary themes into nearly every aspect of the campaign that could make her America's first woman president. But more broadly, two decades later, where do women in politics stand? Joining us is Ambassador Swanee Hunt. She's chair of the Institute for Inclusive Security. She's also very active in encouraging women to run for office. She also served as ambassador to Austria under President Bill Clinton. Ambassador, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Now, you were serving as ambassador to Austria at the time of that Beijing speech. Explain a little bit about what went on behind the scenes at the time prepping that speech. Hillary Clinton was first lady, after all, not secretary of state. It was a pretty big shakeup of protocol for a first lady to go onto a stage like that and say what she said.
Well, the big shakeup was whether or not she should go to China at all, because there was a lot of hue and cry about human rights abuses. And there were Chinese dissidents who were here in the United States and elsewhere speaking out. And so the China desk did not encourage her. In fact, they said it would be a real mistake to go. But the human rights desk in the State Department was very encouraging. And she made her decision. She said, you know, this is not going to be discussed anymore. I'm going and I'm heading this delegation, because she knew what she could do. She could connect the human rights issue to the role of women worldwide in increasing inclusive mode of security.
So 20 years after that speech, Ambassador Hunt, we've seen the elevation of horrible cases like Malala in Afghanistan, winning the Nobel Prize, but also her terrible abuse. What is your assessment of the progress, maybe of the world's attention to women's rights as human rights, since that speech was made?
It's an excellent question. About 5 years after Beijing, there was a very, very important UN Security Council resolution. And it said women are not just victims like Malala. They are victims like Malala became, speaking out. And they must be key decision makers throughout the whole decisions about preventing war, stopping war, stabilizing. And one of those ways is to be in politics. And so one of the things that I do through our institute is to work in 40 different conflicts around the world and encouraging women to have the strongest voice they can so that policymakers put them at the decision-making tables, the negotiating tables. And then you end up with a very different peace agreement.
Of course, women gaining office and human rights for women, they're really not the same thing at all. There is a risk at times of women gaining seats in a parliament and everybody thinking, well, we've achieved a thing here without maybe any significant changes in policy. Where have you seen those policy changes or even cultural changes actually take root after more women get into the parliament or the city council or even the prime minister's office?
Oh, you're singing my song. I'm just finishing a book called Rwandan Women Rising. There you had a genocide. It would be the equivalent of 3.5 million Americans being killed, if you can imagine, in 3 months. And today, women are 64% of the parliament. They're half the Supreme Court. They're half the cabinet. And that country has leapfrogged over other countries in terms of education, and the lifespan has doubled. The World Bank has never seen anything like it.
How far has the world come overall? You mentioned the example of Rwanda. There are some basic facts that we've known now for a good long time, that basic control over reproduction, democratic rights, and even a small amount of economic opportunity, even if it's a microloan, can make an enormous amount of difference in the self-determination that women have, especially in poor countries. We're talking a little bit about electoral politics, but in a way, this is more important. How far do you think the world has come in recognizing sort of these basics?
Well, the difficulty here, and I'm sorry to talk about the negatives, like Egypt, where women are in Tahrir Square, and then they don't get themselves onto the Constitutional Commission, and then not one woman there. And then you end up with a terrible constitution that sets the country back. Everything falls apart. And so I go to the UN. I say, why don't we have women in these negotiations anywhere across Africa? And the UN official says, well, the warlords won't have women because they're afraid that the women will compromise. Well, in fact, that is one of the tools that women have. They work across the aisles. They find ways to connect. And it's not just in Africa. It's not just in Egypt or Rwanda. They do this all over, including in the United States.
Ambassador Swanee Hunt, let's bring it back to the United States for a minute before we let you go. There are more women in the Senate than ever before, more women in the House than ever before. How would you rate the progress here in Washington, here in the United States, in women gaining office?
Well, in fact, the increase has been extremely slow. I hate to be a downer here, but the poor Republicans, they're 8% of the Republicans in Congress are women, 8%. Now, another way to say that is 92% are men. Okay. And the reason is the women can't get out of their primaries. They run at the same rate as the Democratic women, but they can't get out of their primaries because they're not radical enough. But the Democrats, instead of 8%, are in the mid-30s. And what a difference it makes as they work across the aisles. I mean, you'll remember that when we were about to fall off the fiscal cliff a few years ago, it's Susan Collins, a Republican, who stood up in the Senate and said, I have a compromise.
That's true.
Like a day and a half, yeah, before. And it was Democratic women who joined her. That was the clincher, to see this Republican woman joined by Democratic women to save the country and the world from an economic implosion.
Ambassador Swanee Hunt, chair of the Institute for Inclusive Security, former ambassador to Austria under President Bill Clinton. Ambassador, thank you.
Thank you.